Okay, so last week we started Perek Chof Beis, that's chapter 22. We got a little bit into it. Actually, on page, well, if you're having the, if you're in the Tanya, so it's on page 54. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines from the top. It's starting the words, V'lochei Nikra Elokim Acherim. Right, that's, yeah. Yeah? Let's see, let me. Okay, so just a little recap. So we talked about in 20 and 21 how really everything is part of Hashem's reality. Talked about the difference between our speech and Hashem's speech, and Hashem's speech, even when it comes out, it's still part of Him. But as he started in this week's, this chapter 22, that's the Torah still speaks in our language, because to us it still seems like the speech is creating something that's an other, and that Hashem is going through the process of Tzimtzum, which is to create something where He's completely hidden, right? And He said that to the point where Hashem speaks and hides Himself to such an extent, he says it became so strong, that Simpson became strong, that he's able to create even things which are tome, impure and klipa, and yet they still receive the energy, they still receive their life existence from Hashem's and Hashem's speech, but it's completely hidden, right? So in other words, it's really two things. He's talking about creating the world, which is already through the concept of Tzimtzum. Even the upper world is really through Tzimtzum, because they're limited things and they're finite and so on. But particularly in this world, we have this idea of Klippa. Klippa are things which completely conceal Hashem's presence and consciousness, and sometimes even deny Hashem's consciousness to some level. And that's the amazing power of Hashem, really, that He can do that, that He can still be here, but still be, you know, still part of His reality, but yet it can be so hidden that it can be creating such a thing. In fact, it's interesting, because this year, you know, the Basi Lagani, the Yud Shvat Mahimer, that's every year, really it's got to do with this also, the infinity of Hashem's light, that it could be revealed in the very low levels, but it could also go through a very high Tzimtzum and be withdrawn to such an extent that it gives room to something that is completely Klippa, and that Hashem's presence and consciousness is completely hidden. Right? That's the thing. Okay. So he says, let me just find the text there. Okay, now, so like this.
Interesting, because
yeah, that's a very good question. So this year's Basa Lagani, by the way, is a very complicated Basa Lagani. But there's different ways of learning, but let's just go with how he's learning this year's Basa Lagani. The light that goes up is, yeah, it's different Simsum actually. So what's happening is like this, that Hashem's light in its infinite source completely doesn't give room for any finite existence. So it's that withdrawal, that light goes up and is withdrawn to a higher level of concealment. It goes, in other words, light is normally defined in the context of revelation. In Basa Lagani, what he's explaining there is that it ascends higher than its own definition. It ascends to the level of concealment, level of darkness almost, right? Where that gives room for Tzimtzum. In other words, that gives room for the concept of concealment. But then the process is that the Eitz Chaim tells us that the process is that creates the complete Tzimtzum. Hashem puts His whole infinite light to the side, and then He draws down like what we call a thin light, a kav, which is to reveal Himself and to be able to be create this world. But that kav itself goes through a whole Tzimtzum of concealment, and that's what He's talking about here. Yeah, so okay, that's in, I think, a synopsis here. Okay, now He says, so that's why Klippa, in Kabbalah, Klippa is called Elokim Acherim, foreign gods. Now, normally that's something how we explain the idea of Elokim Acherim, right? When Hashem says, don't follow foreign gods, it means complete Avodah Zarah, right? Like serving an idol, yeah? But in Kabbalah, not only is the idol considered lakim acherim, but any klippah, the existence of klippah, the existence of an impure entity in this world, an entity that is blocking Hashem's presence, is called lakim acherim. Why is it called a foreign god? Yeah, so he says like this. Because it's called Elokim Achirim, because of the way Hashem sustains it. In other words, like, let's understand a few things here. Klippah, right? Klippah is an entity. Yeah? Hashem created Klippah. Nothing can exist outside of Hashem. That's the foundation of the Jewish religion, right? We don't have God and something else, Chas v'Shalom, right? Everything is Hashem. So therefore, when Hashem creates Klippah, it's an entity created and allowed to exist by Hashem, which means, like everything that exists, it has to receive some sort of godly infusion, some sort of godly energy to keep it alive, right? However, we're going to learn that the relationship of Hashem, at least in a revealed way, between Hashem and Klippah, is very different than Hashem and the rest of existence, particularly Torah mitzvahs, but even the world, right? And the way that Hashem sustains the Klippah is in a different type of way, which you can explain in a minute, which results in the fact that it's called Elokim Acherim. Because Elokim Acherim, the word Acherim, normally means another God, Elokim Acherim, right? Here we're going to say that Acherim means something else. Acherim means external, which means it's a reference to how Hashem is sustaining it. We'll soon see in a second, right? It says like this. Why? That's why it's called foreign gods, because its nurture, its energy, is not coming from the internal chayas of Hashem, it's coming from the back door of Kedusha, like the behind of Kedusha. Now what does that mean? So we have to get used to these terms, pnimius and chitzonius. Or another word for chitzon is achurayim, right? So he starts to explain, I'm just going to give it a bit of a synopsis. I started doing it towards the end of last week's shiur, but I was rushed. So he says like this, says, when a person does something, whatever we do, we have a desire to do, otherwise we wouldn't do it, correct? But there's different types of desires. So really there's three. There's what we call pnimius haratzon. Pnimius haratzon means when I do something, because I really want that. I'm doing something, and that something is what I really want, right? So even in a very physical setting, like I gave you the analogy last week, a person earns money because he wants to feed his family. That's exactly what he wants. He wants to feed his family, right? That's a person who's close to his family, loves his wife, loves his kids. He wants to feed his family. So that rotzen, that desire is called the desire coming from his pnimius. I don't know how you translate pnimius. It's his essence, right? I'll tell you how it's explained, how it's being used here. You know, in the physical body of a person, the face is called the panim, right? The back is called the achor, the back. What's the difference? The reason we call it the face is called the panim is because the face of a person reveals what's behind the face. It's like what's really, it's revealing the essence of the person, right? The back is his body. You look at a person at the back, you see a back. I mean, that's what you see the person, but you're not seeing the pnimius of the person. That's why it's called achorayim, right? Same thing in ratzon. When I do something that I really want to do, it's not just I have a desire to do it. My pnimius, the essence of what I want, is in that ratzon. Which I'll do it with great energy, with great enthusiasm, right? It could be that what I'm doing in order to reach that is not pnimius or ratzon, right? So I might have a job in a store selling potatoes or something, and that's leading me to be able to support my family. But, so obviously if I'm giving an analogy, it can be anything, it can be a plumber, electrician. So the work that I'm doing, I also want to do, but it's not the pnimius of my ratzon, right? It's still a ratzon, I still want to do it, I'm happy to do it every day, and especially that it's serving my real ratzon, which is to support my family, but it's called, in Chassidus, it's called chitzonius ratzon. It's more the external of the ratzon, right? But then there's even a lower level of external ratzon, and that's called achurayim de ratzon. It's the back of ratzon. Which, like, let's say I do something because I have to. I really don't want to do it. I give someone a present because I'm not, but I'm not, I don't like the person. I hate the person, right? I'm giving them a present because I have to, because I don't know, they'll be nice to me, they'll won't drive me crazy, whatever the case is, right? So I do it, yeah? That is not even chitzoni saratzen. When I work in an office because I want to stay my family, that's not my real ratzen to work in an office. My real ratzen is to support my family. But I'm happy to sit in an office, not a problem. I enjoy my job, that's okay. It's just, it's not, compared to the goal, it's chitzoni saratzen. When I give a present to someone that I really am not interested in, it's called acharayim l'ratzon. And therefore, the way I give it is completely different. Sometimes even it reflects even physically. Like, I don't give it with my face, with my smile, unless I'm taking it. But, you know, I give it here, take. Like, go, take it. You know, it's like it's a... I need to do it, let it get done. Like, it's from the back, right? Okay. He says, what does it mean? He explains the word acharayim, the back. It's called the back of the ratzon. He says like this: Pirush acharayim, ka'odba manoisin dover l'soina shelo b'rasoina. It's like a person who gives something to his enemy against his will. Shemashlich aloy k'la'achar k'seifoy. You throw it behind your shoulder. Like, take it. Ki machsir ponov mimenu misinose oisay. You almost turn away because you hate him. You know, I'm thinking maybe like a. Maybe like an example of this would be, if you take someone to court, for example, you believe that he takes you to court, and he wants money from you, and you believe you don't owe it to him, right? And you're upset with him, and you're angry with him, etc., etc., but the judges rule that you do have to pay him, right? So when you pay him, it's not going to be like, with a smile. Yeah, take it. You want to take it. That's like achurayim, it's the back of the rotzen. In other words, it's, I want to do it because I want to be compliant, but I'm not really interested. In other words, it's a lower level. Okay. And like I said, sometimes it even reflects in the physical way that I do it. I don't do it with a smile, I don't do it by looking at the person. It's much more backhanded. I'll send someone else, I'll send my secretary to give it to him, I'll wire it to him, whatever. It's not the pneumius eratz, right? Okay. It's the same thing. Kach l'maylo, so to above, Hashem. We talk about p'chinas ponim. The pneumius is pneumius eratzin ho'elyon v'cheftzay amiti. It's the Hashem's eratzin is the Hashem's pneumius eratzin. And his real desire, Asher Chofetz Hashem, that Hashem wants. What does he really want to do? Who does he want to give energy to? Who does he want to give life to? La'ashpia chayes, to give life. L'chol ha'korev elov, to whoever is close to him. Misitra di kedusha, from the side of kedusha. Yeah? Avol, that's what he really wants to do. All those when he does a mitzvah, as he says, next chapter. That's what Hashem really wants to do. He wants to give, he wants to reveal, he wants to be felt, he wants to manifest himself, he wants to give and provide life energy to the side of Kedusha that is near to him, that is close to him, that is surrendered to him, right? Avola sitra achra v'atumah, but the existence of sitra achra. And impurity, yem toyav as Hashem eser sonde, using the lashon of the pasuk. It's actually the abomination of Hashem that he actually resents. He does not give chayas to klipah from the pnimius of his ratzin. The chefse amitin, his true desire, asher chofetz bom chas v'sholem, that he really wants it. Ki'im, but rather, how does Hashem sustain the klipah? He gives it life energy, but command the shod the basakas for the soni shalai b'risoyne. It's acharayim the ratzin. It's like someone who throws something to his enemy backhandedly. Right? That's how Hashem sustains the klipah. See, the obvious question is, it's obvious, but he has to sort of clarify it and say it out loud. So that's the case. Why does he keep the clipper alive altogether? Right? If he doesn't want it, if he hates it, why does he keep it alive? He keeps it alive because it's a means to an end. What's the means to an end? So the way he puts it over here is, basically what he's going to say now is to give us free choice. Because Hashem wanted us to serve him. He wanted us to serve him in a way where we choose right over wrong, good over evil, right? Yeah, and that there's evil and there's good, like Hashem says, Re'ei Nasati Lefanecha. Hashem says in the pasuk, look, I'm giving before you life and death, good and bad, and you should choose the good, right? And if you choose the bad, there's consequences. If you choose the good, there's also consequences, good consequences, right? See, that's what he says, Rakdei Lahanish Yisrashoyim V'Gnusoch Lo Yitzadikim. He does it because he wants to punish the wicked and give reward to the righteous. The achaf in the sitra achra, and the reward to the righteous is that they were successful in subjugating the sitra achra and ignoring the sitra achra and controlling the sitra achra, right? And not choosing it, and rather choosing the good. And that's so that's why it keeps it alive. But does he want it? No. He needs it. No, he needs it. He doesn't need anything. He wants it because he wants to achieve a goal. Hashem wants a dirba tachtoinim. Dirba tachtoinim means we have to bring Hashem into this world, but it has to come through our service, has to come through the struggle, through choosing good. Yeah? For that, you need a sitra achra. Zeh nikra b'chinas achurayim. That's why it's called achurayim, the rotzino elyon, baruch hu. It's called the back of the will of Hashem. Yeah? So that's in a synopsis. Now, it actually breaks it down a bit more. Says, Hine, he inserts something that's not, it's a little bit cryptic, actually. I'll discuss with someone overseas exactly what the pshat is here, but I think, anyway, I'll give it over as best I can. So, Hine, Rotzen u'elyon b'chinas ponim, Eibishter's rotz, pnimius rotzen, right? So he said that the pnimius rotzen is what he gives life to something that's really close to him and the side of Kedusha, right? Which later in the next chapter is going to talk, of course, how that manifests itself, particularly in performance of mitzvahs, learning Torah. Then Hashem is then mamash connected to Hashem's pnimius, right? And Hashem, that's what Hashem wants, and that's his pnimius rotzen. But here he makes a comment and he says, not just Torah mitzvahs, but humokar achayim hamahavas kol olamos. Actually, it's the source of all the worlds, not klipa. But all, in other words, you can have existence that's not klipa, particularly in the higher worlds, right? Which also is not pnimius haratzen, and it's not klipa. In other words, it exists, right? So it's also coming from the ponim, from the pnimius, although it's more like chitsoinius haratzen. Yeah, so I think he's dividing up here into three. In other words, like this. There's pnimius haratzen, which is much more in Torah, mitzvahs, and kedusha. And there's chitzonius haratzen, which is all coming from his pnimius, but it's like I gave you the analogy before. He's doing the job, he wants to do it. He doesn't hate it, he enjoys it, he likes it. Yeah. And that's just the existence of worlds. As opposed to klipa, where actually it's achurayim haratzen. It actually doesn't want it. You're just giving it, yeah. So the worlds really come from the more pnimius, I guess the chitzonius of the pnimius, but it's still more the pnimius of Hashem, right? Okay. But not so by sitra achra. He says like this, v'lefi she'eino shoyre klal ala sitra achra, but because he doesn't actually rest in the sitra achra, gam b'b'chenes achorayim sh'rotzen le'elyon, now he adds another level. He says like this, even what he gives klipper, right? What he gives the sitra achra in order to exist, eino melubish b'soicha mamish. Now, this is a new concept. So like this. There's the way Hashem gives the ratzin, and also what happens. So like this. When Hashem gives the energy to Klipper, so it's not a revelation of his pnimius. He's hiding. He's giving it the back. He's throwing it over his back shoulder, so to speak, right? But it's more than that. Even the way the energy arrives at the sitra achra is different to the energy, how it arrives to the world, or to Torah mitzvahs. Why? When Hashem gives chayas to the world, it's something we call memalek olamim, especially the higher worlds, right? This world is more a world of klipa, actually, so it's different, but because it conceals Hashem completely. Okay, in the world you have different levels. But let's say the higher worlds, even the world of Asiya, but the more spiritual world of Asiya, where it's not Kedusha, but there's a godly consciousness. I mean, they feel that they're part of Hashem. It's an existence, it's not Kedusha, it's not completely bottled to Hashem, but there's a godly consciousness in those worlds, right? There, the way Hashem provides the energy, the life energy, is what we call melubish. Hashem is enclosed in the creation. There's a godly energy which interacts, which is embedded, let's say, is the word probably, in the Bria, in the existence, in the entity to keep it alive, right? By Klipah, the main energy that Hashem gives is not embedded in it. It's like from a distance. So we call the Chassidus makif, it hovers. It's not interactive, it's not embedded in the klipa. which is much, right? It's much thinking of an analogy, like for example, you can see this even when a person talks to someone else. When you talk to someone you want to talk to, there's a, we call these slapshots, there's like an interaction. You look at the person, you talk, he responds, there's a deep intertwining happening, right? Let's say you talk to someone that you don't want to talk to him. It's like, again, the enemy you want to give a present to, but you also have to say something to him. But you won't interact. You'll say it, and that's it. You'll say it from a distance. It's much weaker communication, right? Right? So in other words, when Hashem sustains the clipper, right? When Hashem sustains the clipper, number one, it's Achrayim Dratzon, it's the backhand of his will. It's very not really his revelation. And even the chayas that he is giving the clipper, it's not really embedded and interactive like it would be the other things in the world, or particularly Kedusha. Yeah? You mean how we're getting chayas from?
Yeah,
that's the point he's going to get to. Right? Because remember the point, spoiler alert, but the point he's going to get to is that every aver is aver dezara. And you're going to the world of klippa. That's the point, yeah.
But it's not embedded, it's just
makif. No, we'll see, there is a little bit, we'll see. Because at the end of the day, to keep something alive, there has to be something that's embedded. We'll see what that is in a second. Okay. Right? So he says, and he says a very strong line. Lochein, therefore, you have to understand like this is. Therefore, because that's the way Hashem is giving chayas, Hashem is giving life to the klipa, yeah? The number one, it's not his pnimius revelation, it's not embedded, it's from a distance. So you can understand from there how strong the life energy is. It's not very strong at all. She says, "V'lakachi mokem ha-misa v'hatuma Hashem mishmarena." That's why it's a place of death and impurity, may Hashem protect us. When there's full Kedusha, there's no death. Now, the reason there's death in the world, even by Tzaddikim, is because there is a certain amount of klippa that was introduced to the world with the first sin, right? In fact, for there, we see that idea right there. When the world was created, it was full of Kedusha, there was not going to be any death, people were going to live forever. Death was introduced into the world when Adam and Chava ate from the fruit. Because they brought an element of klippa into the world, which is still here. Okay, so you can have a person who's really alive his whole life, but in fact the Gemara says there are four people that never sinned. Four people, Gemara says, never sinned. Amram, Yishai, Binyamin, and I forgot another one. Another one was the father of someone I've forgotten. Anyways, but says the I think the Kabbalah last question or the Gemara says, so how can they die? In other words, death is only possible because of klippa. So therefore, someone who lives their life and actually never did any avera at any level really shouldn't die, because he's got the chayis of Hashem, it's kedusha. He's got the primis ratzon of Hashem, and therefore his life should be eternal, right? So says the Gemara that those four people died because of the snake. In other words, because there is a general infusion of klippa into the world anyway, even if you're a complete tzaddik, until Mashiach comes, right? Because of the first sin, okay? But I'm just bringing that up, but that's what he's saying here. Because it gets the chayas from Achurayim, the rotzen, the backhand of the rotzen, and it's not even embedded, it's more just from a distance, and it's not interactive, it's more like hovering, like the analogy I gave you before, like when you're not interested in the person, even when you speak to them, you're speaking to them from a distance, and therefore the communication and the connection is very weak. Therefore, it's Hashem's ultimate concealment, really. There, Hashem is concealing himself. Therefore, you have it's death and it's impurity. Wherever Hashem reveals himself, that's life. As we say, v'atem advekim b'Hashem alakechem chayim kulchem ayoyim. If you connect to Hashem, you're alive, properly alive. Now, it says the thing. Now, obviously, there's a problem here, right? Because you have to say that there's some energy that's interactive, right? There must be some chayus, life, that's embedded in the clipper, because otherwise it really couldn't exist. So he says something like this. He says, "Ki ma'at mizeir oir v'chayis," because the little bit of light and the little bit of life, yeah. Because we no, I'm going back track a second. Because we know that ultimately life comes from being embedded. Like this, it says the neshama comes into the guf. Yeah, there's parts of the neshama that hover above the guf. But the truth is that the only reason that the guf is able to exist because of the soul, because the soul embeds itself in the body. There's an interaction. There must be, right? So he says, "Ki ma'at mizeir oir v'chayis," because a little bit of light, a little bit of life. That the clipper is able to nourish, is able to get from the acharayim of kedusha. There is a little bit, but he bebchinas golus mamish besoicha besoid golus hashchina hanal. It's like that little bit of chayis is there. It's embedded, but it's completely in golus. It means there's no expression. What does golus mean? So give you two examples. Sometimes you can be embedded somewhere, and you can be somewhere, but you have no expression. For example, what's the idea of a prison? When a person's in prison, right? They're there. They're in the room as much as they are if they would be here. What's the difference? When they're in prison, they can't really express themselves properly because they're extremely restricted, right? Same thing, that there is a little bit of chayas that goes and is embedded. So generally, it comes from a charayim derotzen. Generally, the life force that clipper gets life from is really mostly from the hovering stuff. It's not even interactive. It's more from a distance. To get chayis, you have to have a soul. Everything has to have a soul to get chayis, and the soul has to be embedded. So there must be some spark of godliness which is embedded within the clipper to give it energy to exist, to sustain itself, right? Yeah. So he says yes. Even that little bit that is embedded within the clipper is like in golos. It's there, but it's like in prison. So I'll give you a little bit of a mashal for that, a Kabbalistic analogy. You know, we have in Kabbalah this idea of Gilgul, reincarnation, right? Not a Christian concept, it's a Jewish concept. Yeah. Sometimes, for various reasons, neshamas come back to this world. For various reasons, sometimes it comes back to other people in order to fulfill mitzvahs that they couldn't fulfill in the previous generation. Previous incarnation, whatever. Because even Al Tereb later in Tani says, for example, you have to keep coming back because not everyone could do all the mitzvahs. So you got to come back as a man, as a woman, as a kohen, as a levi, as a all this, because there's different mitzvahs with different people. Yeah. So that's the. So that's Gilgul. But sometimes, you came just in time for the real Kabbalistic stuff. One second, I'll just give it to you. Right. But sometimes, for example, the neshama can come down again in another life for a tikkun, because there's something wrong. It can come down to be rectified. The neshama needs a tikkun, right? Sometimes we find that the way that happens is the neshama doesn't necessarily have to come back in a human being. The neshama can come back in an animal, for example, or in even food, in a wheat, right? And what's its tikkun? Its tikkun is, let's say, someone will use it to make a bracha or something, right? Which is very motivating. Like, you never know, you make a bracha on food, which the neshama could be fixing, right? Okay, so anyway, But it says in Kabbalah, when a neshama comes down into an animal, I'm talking about the nefesh shelakis now, the godly soul, right? When it comes to an animal, or comes to a piece of food, it's actually in great pain. It's not an easy ride for the neshama. It's actually a real painful journey for the neshama to have to come into something that's not a human being. Why? Because when it comes into an animal, or it comes into a piece of bread, or a piece of wheat, whatever the case is, right? It's not expressive there. It's like in golos. It's in prison. When the neshama comes into a body, the neshama has the potential to express itself. Okay, we have to just make the choice to give it expression. But it can express itself, right? You can sit and learn and you can be inspired. And on some level, the neshama is expressing itself. And that's good, right? When we do the wrong thing and we don't serve Hashem properly, we're doing the same thing that would happen if it's an animal. We're suppressing it so it doesn't have expression, so we're making it go into Golos, right? We know that the neshama itself is never really and truly in Golos, but it's Golos by external circumstances because it doesn't have expression because it's in prison, right? But when a neshama comes down like into a wheat or into a kernel of wheat or into an animal, whatever the case is, neshama can't express itself. There's no ability for neshama to express itself because there's no ability for a neshama to express itself in an animal, only a human being. So therefore, neshama is in Golos. It's there. It's embedded. Right, but it's in total Golos. It's in exile. Same thing says like this: when Hashem created the forces of impurity, klippa, and those forces that are sort of completely concealing of Hashem. Number one, it's coming from His external, non-externally, His backhanded will. It's not really what He wants at all. It's just He's keeping it alive because we need free choice. Right. Second of all, the way He gives it life force is very different. It's not abundant revelation, and it's not even interactive or embedded, it's more from a distance. Like we said, when you talk to someone you don't want to talk to, it's more from a distance, right? And even a little bit of energy that has to be embedded into the clipper, it's there, but it's completely engulfed, it has no expression. So that emphasizes the concept why the clipper is called a place of death and impurity. Because the energy is very, very minimal. It's extremely minimal, right? So you can see where he's going, right? Obviously then, as Yidden, as Jews, as people who serve Hashem, obviously what we're going to want to try and connect to is not a place of absence of life. We're going to try and connect to life, right? Which we're going to end up, really, the only true life is Hashem and serving Hashem. Yeah? Sorry?
No,
serves a purpose. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So later on in Tanya, when it tells us that we have to sometimes once in a while like sit down with ourselves, give us a good talking to, and it gives a very sharp way, like some not we should do this all the time, but once in a while we've got to knock the Nefesh HaBamis down, right? So he says there that you have to say that when a person makes a choice to connect to Sitra Achra, he's worse than the Sitra Achra. Sitra Achra at least doesn't have a choice, so it serves its function. Good, but it's still a place of death because it doesn't have a lot of Hashem in it, right? But that's its purpose, okay. But when we choose to go there, then we're worse. In other words, we've chosen...
Because it doesn't deny God's existence.
Well, what, the clipper?
Yeah. In doing what it's doing, it's not... It's
correct, so there's a concept, yeah. So the Gemara says... We'll get there. By the way, I want to just add in something interesting. You know that, we learned that this idea, it doesn't have to do this prayer, I just want to bring it out, it's interesting. So we'd say that the forces of Klippa, the entity of Sitra Achra, the other side and Klippa, has to have some life to exist, but it's very minimal. So it's from a distance, it's minimal, it's not embedded, and so on. And the part that is embedded is in Golos, and so on, right? Which is why we learn that, just explain something in the Torah, didn't halach in the Torah. We learn that Sitra Achra is always craving for more life. Because it doesn't have a lot. Right? It's like a deprived person that is looking for food. Yeah. Now, the problem with the Sitra Achra is that it cannot get any life from Kedusha, from holiness. Because it's such an entity of Klippa that if it gets a boost of holiness, it'll be blinded by it, it'll be overwhelmed by it, it won't be able to exist as Klippa anymore. Right? Because its entity is one of concealment, so it can't actually take, right? So it needs more food. You know, it's like, God forbid, they say, just explain what I mean. You know, if a person is very, very emaciated and very deprived, to feed them too much food is dangerous, right? So same thing, Klippa wants to exist, but it's existing in a very, very minimal dose of godly energy, right? But obviously it can't come anywhere near Kedusha, because Kedusha is much too overwhelming for it. It won't be able to exist. It will cease to exist if it becomes Klippa, right? And its purpose is to exist. It wants to exist. It wants to exist as a egocentric being, of a concealing being, right? Concealing entity. So what it does is it looks for like a residue. It looks for a little bit of extra chayes, right? Which is why it explains that, you know, we have the laws, even though we know it's chukim and things we don't understand and they're completely beyond our comprehension, but there are laws in the Torah of tumah and tahara. Tumah and tahara. Purity and impurity. Someone dies, their body is impure. A woman gives birth, she's impure, she has to go to mikveh. Nidah is impurity. All these things, right? Even in the morning, we have tumah on our hands because our neshama is where. If you look at all these things, what is it all about? Mostly, it's all about one thing. That when there was an absence of kedusha, and the kedusha goes away, there's a tumah. Why? Because what happens is, when, let's say a person has a neshama, right? And the greater the kedusha, by the way, the greater the tumah afterwards. Why? The person has a neshama. The neshama is kedusha. When a person's alive, the forces of tumah have a very hard time getting energy from it because the neshama is there. It can't really connect to the neshama, right? The neshama leaves a person's body, it leaves a little bit of the impression of the neshama. And that's when all of a sudden the klippa comes and tries to get it. That's why klippa attracts itself to a vacuum of kedusha, because there's a little bit of the kedusha left, a little bit like a jar of honey. You empty out the jar and leave a little bit of honey, all the bees come, right? And all the flies come. Same sort of idea. Anyways, that's why nidah is tumah, because it's an absence of life. That's why a woman has a baby, she carries around life in her the whole time, and then the life is still existing, but not in her anymore. So she gives off a life, that's why there's an impurity, right? That's why you see in the Torah, interesting thing, by the way, just completely off the topic, but if you look in the parasha, it talks about the impurity of a woman after she gives birth and having to go to mikveh and so on, in the biblical level of the halacha, it says for a boy, a woman is tamei seven days, a woman 14 days. Almost sounds like discriminatory. Why? More tumah because it's a girl? No, hefech, it's the opposite. Because when by carrying a girl, you're carrying more life because you're carrying someone, you're carrying a baby that could also give birth. So it's more life in a way. That's why it's more tumah afterwards, right? Anyway, okay. So he says, let's go back, let's go continue. He says, v'lochein, therefore, nikra b'shem alakim acherim. That's why, that's why klippa is called alakim acherim, foreign gods. Yeah? What's it called a foreign god? It's not a god. But it's an entity of arrogance. It's an entity of independence. Before we said, because it's alakim acherim, because Hashem gives it life from the acherim, from the backhand. It says more now. It says, she avoid the zora mamish. It's like avoid the zora. Ukfira and denial ba'achduso shel melech ba'achadosh baruch hu, of the oneness of Hashem. So it's the second reason why it's called alakim acherim. Because it's similar to avoid the zora. Why is it called avoid the zora? Because the entity of klippa, it has in it a spark of godliness, but that spark of godliness is completely exiled within it. The spark of godliness has no expression, right? So therefore, what is the sitra achra's feeling? What's its consciousness? Therefore, the sitra achra, in whatever form the sitra achra is existing, it's not surrendered to Hashem. It feels itself as an independent thing. Yeah? On the contrary. Right? It says in Tanakh that the klippa sort of causes professors that says it's just me and nothing else. Like Paroi said, I made the river. You start to feel like you run the world. Right? V'lochein omer razal. That's why Chazal tell us, shegasu soruach, shekulo kavod zorah mamish. Arrogance, the Gemara in Sota has a whole few pages about arrogance. Gaiva, haughtiness, ego, right? Gemara says that ego, arrogance, is like avod zorah, like idol worship. So you think so what does that mean? Does that mean a person who's arrogant is like, he's a pagan worshipper? So this is the point Tani is getting to. Point is that yes, to a certain degree, obviously it's not idol worship, right? Idol, pagan worship of the Torah carries a capital punishment. person has an ego, big ego doesn't. Okay, but subtly it's the same idea. Avodah Zarah's klipa means Avodah Zarah is something that just it's giving room. It's a denial of the oneness of Hashem. Oneness of Hashem again in Chassidus doesn't mean that there's only one God. Oneness of Hashem means or indivisible God. It's more than that. Oneness means that really there's no other independent reality.
Okay.
Ego means I'm something. I'm something independent, right? Again, humility or self-negation doesn't mean I'm nothing. You're always something, but the something is part of Hashem. You might be a very talented person, a very clever person, a very strong person. Maybe you should use that strength and use that talent, but it's all part of Hashem's reality. But an ego person is I'm something. Says the Gemara, that's like Avodah Zarah. That's what the Gemara says, that Hashem says, I can coexist with anyone, even the greatest sinner, I can coexist with him or her, but I can't coexist with someone who has guy who has ego. Why? Because he doesn't let me in, denying my existence. By the way, the Gemara also says, it doesn't bring it here, but it's connected, yeah. That anger, rage is also Avodah Zarah. When a person loses the temper, it's also like Avodah Zarah, right? Why? Because anger comes from ego. What does anger come from? You said something to me I don't like, so I blow up. Because you're such a chutzpah. You know who you're talking to? What do you know who I'm talking to? Who am I? In other words, because I'm such a big person. I'm an independent person. I'm an independent entity. Full of strengths that I earned, that I made, and I was able to develop. That's Avodah Zarah. That's why they linked. If we really had bittul to Hashem, if we really surrendered to Hashem properly, we lived in the world of kedusha and bittul, we wouldn't get angry. Okay, it happened to me. It's mashgacha prati. It's supposed to happen. What should I do? You look confused.
I'm struggling because when we spoke
about
the Shabbos, which I'm assuming comes from
the
Sitra,
klipas
noiga.
Okay, by
idea. So.
Yeah.
To tempt him.
Yeah.
But all the while, she wanted him to succeed, and she wanted him to make the right choices. So she wasn't denying the king.
No, I understand that, this is a point. Because he's about to say something interesting, right? Klipa doesn't. There's different levels of klipa. This is the point. Klipa doesn't necessarily mean that the entity of klipa is complete denial of Hashem. He's just not completely bottled to Hashem. That's the difference. Anytime a person gives room for independent existence, even partially, it's Avodah Zarah. Subtle, I mean, nuanced Avodah Zarah. It's like Avodah Zarah. That's what's called a Lekim Achirim. So even the Jewish Nefesh Abamis, animal soul, which is Klippas Noiga, actually, not the other ones that Klippas Tmeres Legamri, but it's still Klippas, still feels itself as a separate entity. It's not the Hashem. Doesn't have bittul. Might one even want to do it Hashem once, ultimately. Right? But it by design, in order to make us fail, it is egocentric. It feels like a separate thing. Right? And that's what he says. Ki iker shoyrish avodah zarah, because what is this essence of avodah zarah? The essence of Avodah Zarah is not bowing down to an idol. That's not where Avodah Zarah starts. It's from Hashanechshav Ladover Bifnei Atzmai. It's the fact that he thinks he's an independent entity. Nifrad Migdushose Shalmokam. Separate from the holiness of Hashem. V'loy kfiru b'Hashem legamri. It's not necessarily a complete denial in Hashem. Yeah? In other words, a person can believe in Hashem. And he can still have an ego. He can still think, yeah, I have Hashem, but you know, I have a role to play here too. Yeah, Taka, of course it was Hashem that made me successful in the business deal, but you know, it was also my talent, like, right? Satla Vedazara that. Because we don't play a role at all, that's the truth, right? Hashem didn't want it, wouldn't happen. So as soon as we become a partner, That's a really subtle avodah zarah, subtle idol worship, right? Now he says, "Kadi isim gemara." It's like it's actually the gemara says it. Actually, I looked up today what the context of the gemara is. Now I've forgotten already. But anyway, the gemara talks about I forgot. Anyway, the Gemara says, the Korala Elokod Elokaya. The Gemara says we're talking about an entity that doesn't deny Hashem completely, but it calls Hashem the God of gods. Right? In other words, it says there that the nations of the world that some of them are not complete in denial of Hashem. But they still call Avodah Zarah because they believe that Hashem is in charge, but there's other things in charge too. In fact, the Rambam says that's exactly how Avodah Zarah started. Right? The historic evolution of Avodah Zarah started because there were people that saw that Hashem is giving his sustenance through the way of nature, and some of that comes through the sun, the moon. They started to think, well, the sun, the moon, we should say thank you. Right? But not realizing that saying thank you to the sun is like saying thank you to the axe that's chopping the tree. The wood chop, you say thank you to the wood chop, not the axe. The axe is just a tool. Right? Then they start, well, maybe there's some autonomy in the axe. Maybe there's some autonomy in the sun. Yeah, Hashem's still the boss, but there's middle management, you know what I'm saying? And then I become the middle management too. Like, I make my own decisions. That's all part of Avodah Zarah. Yeah. And when you engage in that, he says, but he says that the nations of the world, they serve Avodah Zarah, not that they deny Hashem's existence, but they consider themselves also something, a reality. And by doing that, they separate themselves from the holiness of Hashem, because they're not completely bottled, they're not given over, they're not surrendered completely to Hashem. Why? It's like we explained before. Hashem only really interacts with something that is completely surrendered to him, only with Kedusha, holiness. So Hashem says that arrogance, he doesn't coexist with arrogance, because arrogance means that he's hidden there. They're making Hashem into God. This is no expression of godliness. Hashem can't come in, so to speak. Obviously, he keeps it alive, but he's not expressed there. So that's why it's like a verse. V'lochei nikroim turei depruda Zohar HaKadosh. That's why in the Zohar, Klip has another name. Klip has a few names called Sitra Achra, because it's the other side of Kedusha. Sitra means the side, right? Sitra Achra means the other side. Then there's also Klipa. Klipa means like a skin. Just like a skin conceals the fruits, a Klipa conceals Hashem. And in the Zohar, the Klipa is called Tura de Pruda, separate, divided mountains. I mean, every mountain is a mountain on its own. In other words, Klipa is called that because Klipa means when something separates itself off from the Bittul to Hashem. When there's an entity that seems to give itself independence outside of Hashem, even if it's partial independence, that's Klipa. If that's Klipa, Hashem doesn't reveal itself there. Hashem doesn't reveal itself there. It's Avodah Zarah. It's called the Lakim Acherim. And it's not a place of real life. It's denial in the oneness of Hashem. To kula kamek alachoshiv, that really we know that everything really is completely surrendered to Hashem. Everything is insignificant towards Hashem, like we learned in the chapter 20 and 21, right? Be'emes laHashem is brachol tzoy. Now Machai is kula, and he keeps everything alive. Umahava oisom ma'ayin yesh tamin, and he keeps it alive from something, from nothing, always. Every part of the world really is completely bottled to Hashem, but it's completely not revealed when you create a situation of klipa. Then Hashem doesn't, that his previous aratzin is not there. He doesn't interact with it properly. He just acts from a distance or in golus, as we said before. And therefore, it's a place where Hashem is not revealed. Therefore, it's a place called Avodah Zarah. It's a place that seemingly is giving itself only its own independence other than Hashem. And therefore, it's not a place of Kedusha. And therefore, it's not a place of real life. And it's a place of death and tumah and impurity. Yeah? Oh. By understanding this, we're going to stop now. But by understanding this, we can go to chapter 23. We have three more chapters to this part, right? As I said. So understanding this, that we can go to chapter 23, we can understand what Torah mitzvah isn't. In other words, what really Torah mitzvah is. Torah mitzvah is not clear, but Torah mitzvah is Kedusha. That's the real primus aratzon of Hashem. And therefore, when you engage in Torah mitzvah, you're not making yourself distant from Hashem and his life force. On the contrary, you're becoming much more infused with Hashem and his desires and his chayas and his life and everything like that. Okay.
Thank you.